Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Here's the podcast from Middays with Susie Larson. Enjoy the conversation. It's only just a matter of... Welcome to Middays. I'm Susie Larson. So great to have you listening today. I love joining you every single day to bring you conversations that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heighten your awareness of His very real and very precious presence in your life. Well, when you think about it, life is just full of decisions. Sometimes we overthink things. Other times we rush ahead with no thought whatsoever, and we totally regret it later. So how do we lean in, listen for the Lord, and make decisions that actually move us towards God's best for us and for those around us? Well, I am thrilled to welcome Emily Freeman to the show today to talk about her new book, The Next Right Thing, A Simple Soulful Practice for Making Life Decisions. And you know this, I go through many, many, many books, both as an author and a radio host. I love this book. It's a beautiful hardcover book, The Next Right Thing, A Simple Soulful Practice for Making Life Decisions. I wholeheartedly endorse this thing, and we've got 6 copies to give away. This is a $20 book, and it's worth that and then some. So you know the drill, but if you don't, I'll tell you right now. Get in on the drawing. Email middays@myfaithradio.com. I felt like my heart just was at ease as I wrote. She has a lyrical way of writing. There's so much beautiful content in this book. I want you to have a copy. Email middays@myfaithradio.com. Put The Next Right Thing in the subject line, and don't forget the mailing address. We'll get Emily on in just a quick moment. Tomorrow is the big night for our big live studio audience. We're almost sold out. We've got 10 spots left. I want you to join us, will you? $15 tickets, and it'll be worth it. It's going to be a night of great inspiration. We're going to laugh hard, I think. We're going to worship, and we're going to get together, and I pray that you walk away with a new sense of God's dream for your heart, that you've confronted some self-limiting beliefs in your soul, and that you believe that God has an amazing, amazing work that He wants to do in and through you. You can find more information on the web at myfaithradio.com. It's tomorrow night, right across the street from our radio station. Hope you can join us. All right, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get her on the show. Emily Freeman is the Wall Street Journal bestselling author of Simply Tuesday and A Million Little Ways. She's the host of the Next Right Thing podcast and helps create space for the soul to breathe, offering fresh perspective on the sacredness of our inner life. And Emily and her husband live in North Carolina with their 3 children. Emily, great to talk with you again. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Susie. It's always my pleasure to be here.
Look forward to this conversation, and the book is so great. I can't wait for our listeners to hear more about it. But you know this because I've talked with you before. We love to start out by talking scripture. Wondering if there's a verse you've been hanging around these days you can share with us.
Do you know, there's a passage of scripture that I know is probably very familiar to a lot of your listeners, but it's one that I keep finding richer and deeper meaning in, and that's Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." And that whole passage has just been so deeply personal for me this past year. And I'm awed at how something so familiar that I've memorized can continue to reveal who Jesus is, who God is, who the Spirit is in our lives.
Isn't it something as you get older and you get to know God on a deeper level, how much you learn to relax in His love? I mean, I think of the undue stress I put on myself because of worries that weren't mine to carry, fears of future, fears of what people thought. And man, if I could go back and talk to my younger self to say, you know what, relax, you have no wants, really. I mean, the Lord is your shepherd. Let that in. I wonder how different the journey would be, you know?
Oh, it's so true. I heard one version of this passage, and it started, "The Lord is my shepherd." And then instead of "I shall not want," it says, "I have everything I need." And mm-hmm. I love that because that's kind of how we talk, right? And I just think it's so true, but it's hard to remember sometimes.
Indeed it is. Well, you coined the phrase decision fatigue. Talk about what that is.
Well, I actually didn't come up with it, but I do repeat it often. And decision fatigue is definitely something that I think, if you've never heard that phrase before, as soon as you hear it, you probably resonate with it, especially if you're an adult today. They say that we make over 35,000 decisions every single day. And if you think about it, on the one hand, that seems impossible. But when you think about all the little tiny things, or even just the words I'm saying right now, each one is a decision. And though it's subconscious, it still does take energy. And I think sometimes when, especially in times of the year where a lot of events are happening, or you have a transition at your job, or there's the end of school, there's always things going on in our lives. And that can lead to, by the time we go to bed at night, we just have an overwhelming sense of, if I have to make one more decision in my life, I just think I might have to sleep through it. So I think we can all kind of relate to that feeling.
How did the message of this book, and of course it's your podcast as well, but how was it first born in your heart where you realized this is a felt need and I need to speak to it?
Well, I tell you what, Susie, it actually came over time, but it was really the catalyst for it was because I had a big decision to make. And I was trying to decide whether or not I was going to go to grad school. And so while at the time, at first I was like, well, this is kind of a decision that I'm thrilled to be able to make on the one hand. I'm grateful that that's even an option for me. But what I realized was it was really difficult for me to say yes or no to this opportunity. And as I carried the decision around in my life and talked with people in my life and prayed about it, and I had a little bit of time to make it, I realized what was happening was I was really aware of God's voice. I was paying closer attention during sermons. I was asking people questions that I normally maybe wouldn't fully listen to their answers. I mean, it was just causing me to be so aware. And that's when it kind of began to gradually hit me. Wow, look at how this unmade decision, look at how much power it holds in my life. And I wonder if God has actually designed the way that we relate with him to be a way that we're formed spiritually might actually depend upon some of these decisions that we have to make. Because I realized if I didn't have this difficult decision to make, I might not pay as much attention in prayer. I might not be having such a leaning forward posture when I'm in church. And so I just thought it was really fascinating how unmade decisions hold power and how they have the capacity to lead us even closer to God and to people in our community. And that's, I started taking notes on that. And that's kind of the beginning of this whole idea.
In fact, you said the unmade decisions can take us one way or the other into places of fear on lockdown, or we open up to love. So what is the factor? What's the indicator as to which way we go on that continuum?
That's one of the questions that I'm starting to ask myself earlier in the decision-making process. When I was, a while back, I was asked to go on a trip with Compassion International. And at the time, my kids were small, and I was, I had a lot of reasons why maybe I would say no to that trip at the time. But it was also like this amazing opportunity to see the work that Compassion was doing in Manila, the Philippines. And, I was going back and forth, same as before. I couldn't decide, should I go, should I not go? And finally, I had a conversation with our trip leader, and I was telling him my struggles, and he said, Emily, there might be a lot of great reasons for you to say no to this trip, but please don't let fear be one of them. Mm-hmm. And when he said that, Susie, I thought, okay, I actually, deep down, the reason why I'm afraid of saying yes is because I'm afraid of travel. I'm afraid of the flight. I mean, just real practically, like this great opportunity, was I really going to allow my fear of flying to kind of get in the way? And as soon as he said, don't let fear be one of them, that's when it became very easy for me to say yes. And I'm so glad I did. And so now when I have decisions to make, one of the questions I ask myself is, am I being pushed by fear or am I being led by love? And I think when we get really quiet and honest with ourselves, we generally know the difference.
So good. What are some other hindrances to a clarity and wisdom around our decision-making process? How else do we get in our own way, or what other obstacles tend to stand in our way?
It's a great question. I think we have a inflated idea about clarity. I think we all, we say things like, I'm praying to get a peace about it, or I'm praying that the path will be, made clear to me. And I think sometimes we get that. and thank the Lord for it. But there are many times in life where we have to move forward even though the future looks foggy, and that can be really scary. So for me, that's where I have found this mantra of just do the next right thing to be so helpful, because sometimes we don't know the right thing to do big picture, but what we can access is just simply that one next step. I might not know which school to send my kids to, but I can make one phone call to a mom down the road and have one conversation today. And then the next tomorrow, I can ask myself again, okay, now what is my next right thing? So that kind of keeps things present and accessible rather than demanding that the entire decision in my entire life be super clear. It just doesn't usually work like that.
So true. And you've heard the paralysis of analysis. If you start to go, right, well, if I commit to school, everything else, this will happen. But maybe if you're making the call, you're not necessarily committing to the school. You're just taking a next step. But I think we don't take any steps because we're thinking we're taking it all at once. But you don't really do anything significant all at once, do you?
You don't, but that is how it feels, right? When there's a big decision to make, you just think, oh, it's all this, and then we predict into the future all the outcomes that we think would happen, and usually they're terrible outcomes or scary outcomes, rather than kind of keeping it right here and remembering that our friend Jesus is with us every step of the way.
Well, we're going to pause here. When we come back, I want to know how much of our identity plays into our decision-making process, and how much a hindrance, of course. This is an obvious question, but I still want to hear what you'd have to say, that a warped identity would impact the kind of choices we make for our lives. Talking to Emily Freeman, she's a best-selling author. I love this beautiful hardcover book, The Next Right Thing, a simple, soulful practice for making life decisions. You should keep it on your coffee table, it just because it's just packed with wisdom. We've got 6 copies. Thanks, Rebel. 6 copies. So email. You've got a good chance at winning. middays@myfaithradio.com. More great conversation in just a moment. Okay, if I had my way, we'd play that whole song. I love it so much. That's Toby Mack. I'm Susie Larson. Welcome to Middays. Talking to Emily Freeman, who's written a beautiful book, The Next Right Thing, a simple, soulful practice for making life decisions. I really wish we had 2 hours because there's so much here that I want to draw from, Emily. But I asked you before the break, you know, hindrances to wise decision-making practices. And I want to know how much our identity plays into making decisions that really move us forward into the purposes of God, and conversely, how a warped sense of identity may hinder that process.
Well, you know, we have a mutual friend in James Brian Smith, and he talks a lot about the importance of narratives. And if we have true narratives that we believe, true stories we believe about God and about ourselves, then we'll live out from those true narratives and we'll walk in line with who we most deeply are created to be. But if we have narratives that we believe about ourselves or about God that are not true or are based on something warped or deformed or false, then we're going to make decisions from a place, from an unrooted place, from a distorted place. And so I think if I were to ask, you know, if you were to ask me what I believe about God, what I believe about myself, I might say some things that are true, that we all agree on, that maybe are from the Bible, and we would you might nod your head and agree with me. But if you were able to crawl inside my head and see the world through my eyes, you might discover some discrepancies between what I say I believe and how I actually live. Because Dallas Willard talks about how we always live what we believe. We just don't always live what we profess we believe. And I don't think any of us are exempt from that. I just think there are just some certain, whether you call them, you know, tapes that play in your head or just stories that you tell yourself. And it is really difficult sometimes to tease those out, because the tricky thing is they feel true to us. And so if I believe, for example, God is a God who is, you know, standing in the corner of the room with his arms crossed and waiting for me to make the right choice, then I might be really scared to make a decision because I'm afraid I might be punished. Or if I believe that God is indifferent and he kind of has his back turned towards me, then I might think my decisions don't really matter one way or the other, because who cares? What's the difference, right? Now, we would probably never say that out loud, but these are the kinds of things that we, beneath the surface, images that we have of God, really can impact the decisions that we make, whether we feel confident moving forward or whether we feel really afraid.
So, Emily, how do we narrow that space between what we say we believe and what we actually believe?
It's a great question, and I think it starts with this kind of conversation in prayer with people that you trust, and really getting out into the open some of those stories that you believe. One way to do that I found, which might sound a little silly at first because you have to use your imagination, but when I have a decision to make, or when I'm talking with someone who's kind of struggling with a decision, I found this question to be really helpful. And that is, if this room represents your decision, and you're you, and you're sitting here in the room of this decision, where is God in the room, in your imagination, and what's he doing? And it's really fascinating to me that rarely have I asked someone that question and they've been like, well, I have no idea. I don't. Usually God is somewhere in the room in that decision. And sometimes it's, well, he's sitting right in front of me and he's waiting, you know, to hear what I'll do. Or sometimes it's, oh, he's in a corner way over there. Like, he's just not even paying attention. And so that can kind of help. That kind of childlike pretend world can sometimes help trigger those stories that we're believing, because then you weigh that against scripture and you say, oh, no, wait, but it says that God is my shepherd in scripture and that he gives me and is everything I need. So if that story I'm telling myself doesn't line up with scripture, then I can feel sure that it's not a true story.
Oh, my goodness, I love that. This is probably one of my favorite excerpts from the book, and I texted it to my kids today. You said, I cannot say how God will speak to you, but I can say with a fair amount of confidence how he won't. Listen to this, friends. It's for you today. He will not shame you into better behavior. He'll not trick you. He will not tease you. He will not laugh at you. He will not terrorize you. He will not pull rugs out from under you. He'll not drop the other shoe. Maybe you're always bracing for impact. He's not someone who's going to drop the other shoe. He does not pull fast ones. He does not roll his eyes, throw up his hands, and turn his back on you. And Emily, what has been the process in your spiritual journey to learn this to be true about God? As your, you know, as your understanding of who he is has evolved in your heart and brought healing to your soul, what do you point to as far as saying these were catalysts to kind of my great awakenings to understanding truly the heart of God?
I tell you what, the process of learning that, first of all, is lifelong. I'm still learning it. But I think sometimes we make it a little bit too tricky, too difficult, and we try to do our way into understanding true things about God. And in fact, I think that the invitation that we have as believers is to maybe not do so much, but to learn to undo some things and perhaps learn to unlearn a few things that we've picked up about God along the way. We know from scripture that we are made in the image of God, but I think so much during our lives and with our culture and the way that we're brought up, sometimes we also don't realize that, but we're kind of making God in our image. And so because of that, we don't realize we've done that, but we can react to him or live our life or make our choices based upon this God that exist in our own heads. And so sometimes when I hear believers who are, you know, who are growing up into adulthood and having families, and then they begin to have some doubts about God. When I was younger, that doubts really scared me. And I would think, oh gosh, am I not a Christian? Like, why am I doubting? Now though, I actually think it's a really beautiful thing when we begin to question, because what I've discovered is sometimes the things we're questioning, we're not actually questioning God, the Alpha and Omega, the God that Jesus reveals. We're actually questioning that false idea of God that we've built in our minds. And that's a good thing, because we want the real God, Jehovah, the God that we know of the Bible, to reign and rule in our lives. And so I think talking about undoing things, sometimes a very simple thing, Susie, that I have discovered really helps me is when I have, I'll take maybe 5 minutes or a few minutes in the morning. And yes, we can read and pray and all these things are so good and important. But one thing that's often neglected is just having a little time of silence, of sitting in the presence of God without an agenda and recognizing that he is with me, he is for me, and there's not a thing I can do that's going to change it.
So So beautiful. I love a quote that you referenced from Dallas Willard, never believe anything bad about God. I think that's fantastic. And you talked about a time with your mentor when you were processing, should I go to grad school or not? And she said this to you, our Western minds are trained to go down the path of explaining. We think if we can understand it, we can control it. Wow. I mean, literally, we could do a whole show on that, but I want you to unpack that a bit more, if you would.
Well, I think that's where a lot of us get stuck in decision making, is because we don't trust our instinct. We don't trust ourselves to hear God's leading in our own lives. And so, and especially because it's true, in America, we really value education and we value being able to express yourself and being able to explain why we're doing things. And there's a mystery sometimes that I think we miss out on. That sometimes God invites us into. You know, I have a friend right now who she and her husband, they've lived here in town for almost 20 years. They've built their family here. But he recently accepted a job 6 hours away. And on paper, it just doesn't make sense. But they know that they know that they know that their friend Jesus has invited them into this new space. And they're going with great confidence. But could they explain it to their friends and family fully with 5 bullet points and, you know, beginning, middle, and end? I don't know if they can, at least maybe not in a way that would make sense to other people. But I think that's something that often keeps us from making hard choices or taking a risk, is because we think, oh, I can't explain this, so therefore maybe that means it's wrong. And I just don't think that's the way God works.
When you say one of the goals of your message is to help people create space in their soul and in their schedule so they can remember who they are, where they live, and why it matters, we just got about a minute and a half before we go to our hard break at the bottom of the hour here, but I want you just to speak to the whole idea of creating space within your soul, remembering who you are and where you live and why it matters.
Well, Susie, we rush through our days, don't we? I think the world is run by worn out people. And so learning to literally take a little time in the day, I think decluttering our homes, we do that in our homes. Well, how are we doing that within our soul? Our souls are sticky and we're always getting information in. And so that stillness and silence can begin to be a small process of letting go of some of those things we're holding on to so that we can discern our next right thing in love.
So when you talk about silence, what are some other ways that you create space in the soul for your day? I mean, with everything that you're managing, Emily, what are other ways that you just kind of push out the noise so you can hear the voice of God?
It's tricky because I think the truth is we have more silent spaces naturally in our day than we're aware of, but we fill them with distraction. So even walking out to the mailbox can be a time of silence, or sitting in line at the grocery store, standing in line can be a time of silence. Don't look at your phone. These little tiny moments can actually become small ways that we begin to create a little bit more space for us to think and be aware of God's presence with us.
Imagine, friend, how your life might change if your phone was not the boss of you, if you didn't have so many screens all around you. Imagine what would change. We're going to pause here. I'm talking to Emily P. Freeman. Her book is just beautiful. I really love it so much. The Next Right Thing, a simple, soulful practice for making life decisions. So we're going to talk when we come back about the distinction and the difference between what Scripture says about there's wisdom in many counselors, but then there's a time to get quiet before God and to kind of clear out the clutter and hear from him for yourself. How do you know what to do and when to do it? We'll talk more with Emily Freeman about that when we return. So much for tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson. I guess I'm in a Toby Mac mood today, talking to Emily Freeman about her amazing book, The Next Right Thing, a simple, soulful practice for making life decisions. Thanks to Revell. We've got, count them, 6 copies to give away today. This is how you do it. You email middays@myfaithradio.com. Put Next Right Thing in the subject line. Please remember your mailing address. Hey, and if you've got questions or comments for my guest today, why don't you text those in? You can text us at 877-933-2484. So we're talking about the idea, you know, Scripture says there's wisdom in many counselors, but there's times where we can go a little crazy just looking for everybody's opinion where there might be a time to cease from that. In fact, you say, if you see the clear path, the end game, or the five-year plan, if you don't see, I'm sorry, the clear path, the end game, or the five-year plan, take heart. Be excessively gentle with yourself. Get still. Stop talking. Pause the constant questioning of everyone else's opinion. Now hold that thing, whatever it is, in your mind. Pay attention to your body and your soul. Does it rise or does it fall? First, I want you to unpack this whole practice and this idea. I love it so much, where you just stop and close out the clutter. You hold that thing, and then you pay attention. What's going on in your body and in your soul? Does it rise or fall? First, speak to that whole idea.
Well, it's funny because, again, it goes back to that idea. It's kind of counterintuitive in a way to ask yourself that question because, first of all, it sounds a little bit weird. What do you mean, does my soul rise or fall? How am I supposed to know? Because we're really used to looking at more practical things, like, for example, a pro-con list or a bullet point list, some type of list that can tell me should I or shouldn't I. And while those can be so informative and really important, and I would never say throw out the list, but what I do want to say is to invite another practice in, and that is one of paying attention to your body. I think our bodies hold a lot of secrets about our life that if we were just simply willing to listen to them, then they have a lot to tell us. I mean, when we think about, you know, when I've had a stressful day, my body knows it, and I'm sure yours does too. There are certain spots that just my body holds stress, and we can pay attention to that. I had to go to the dentist because I was clenching my jaw, and he's like, well, you hold your stress in your jaw. I had to get a bite guard for it. So Our bodies are so intricately connected. Colossians talks about how Jesus is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And that includes our body and our soul and our spirit, all that we're made up of. And so this idea of when you have a decision to make, and yes, you write those lists, and yes, you talk to people who you trust, and yes, you pray. But another place of information, important area of information, is in my body and in my spirit, in my soul, when I pay attention to this. So asking myself about, for example, a new job opportunity, when I'm holding that in my, you know, in the presence of God, and I think about whether to say yes or whether to say no, is there a sense within me where I feel lifted, where there's a spark of excitement, where there's a feeling of lightness or of joy? Or when I'm considering this opportunity, does it feel like a dark cloud? Is there a sense of dread or doom? Is there a sense of fear that is not a healthy kind of fear, but a scary kind of fear, or a red flag? I've heard someone tell me once that red flags rarely get smaller. They only get bigger. So if you have a red flag kind of that pings up in your soul, chances are there's a reason it's there. And so there's a way that you might want to do your next right thing and chasing down that red flag and see where it's coming from. So just this idea of giving yourself permission to maybe look beyond the normal places where you tend to always look or the people that you tend to always talk to, and open yourself up to the way God might want to speak to you in ways that might be a little different than what you might be used to.
Well, when you think about David going to battle the giant Goliath, you know, Saul gave him his armor and he's like, you know, I can't wear this. I'll try, but I can't wear it. Everybody's going to have opinions about your life. And there is wisdom in not being just bent on doing your own thing. But there is a point where you have to say, God has trained me, prepared me for such a time, and I do need to pay attention. Does this feel right? I'm thinking, you know, for you, your decision to go back to school. Well, I have another friend who went back and said, in hindsight, I was doing that to prove my worth, and it didn't do anything but cost me money and time, and I have a piece of paper. I don't feel any more worthwhile. And so for her, she was like, I was looking to this validation in a way that Christ already paid for, and we just have to pay attention, because I would imagine you'd feel a looming black cloud going, am I going to commit to all of that to prove something Jesus has already proven? I mean, we've got to pay attention to that.
What a great example, Susie. And I'm thrilled you brought that up, because I think so many times we're looking at the external thing, like, is this right or is this wrong? And it's like, well, it might be right for Amy, but it might be wrong for Dan. And it's the exact same decision. And so recognizing that God made us in particular ways for particular things and at particular times, and that even for me, going to school for me this time, it was the right thing for me. But 5 years ago, it might not have been. And so knowing that there's a season for things and that there's timing and also personality involved, there's just so many different nuanced layers, which is why decision-making really can't be done in a vacuum. You can't do it on a pro-con list. You have to consider a whole life perspective. The rhythm of your whole life has to be considered when we're making some of these big decisions.
So good. What does it mean to be a soul minimalist?
Oh, isn't that a fun phrase? Soul
I love
minimalism. I just love it.
it.
Well, a guy I really like to read, his name is Joshua Becker. He's an author and he writes a book about minimalism in your home. And he talks about that minimalism is not that you should own nothing, but that nothing should own you. And when I think about that in my home, it makes perfect sense. I don't want my clutter to own me. You know, I want to clear it out and I want to be able to make space in my home for things that really matter. But I also, that brings me, I'm always thinking about the inner life, Susie. So I think about how does that apply on the level of my soul? Because the truth is, I don't, on the inside of my soul, I don't want things to own me that don't have my permission. For example, like you mentioned before, that feeling of wanting to be validated or of chasing something that God has already provided for me. And so the idea of becoming a soul minimalist is simply allowing a little space and time to recognize some of those things that have a hold on me. And so sometimes it's fear. Sometimes it's, you know, a conversation with my husband in the morning when we're making the kids lunch and breakfast and getting them out the door. And maybe we have a little interaction and it's kind of, you know, and then you move throughout your day and you don't realize it on the surface, but on the inside, your soul, my soul is still hanging on to that interaction. And it kind of impacts how I move through my day. And so adopting this posture of being a soul minimalist is really very similar to being a minimalist in my home. And that is, how can I let go of this clutter, this argument that I had with my husband? What do I need to confess? Might I need to, you know, go to him and reestablish a connection? It might seem really small, but let me tell you, if you have 15 of those really small interactions with people in the morning or through email or at the grocery store, wherever, they add up and they will contribute to not only our posture and our mood, but also the decisions that we make.
So good. You know, we have so much input. Remember, I interviewed Max Lucado a while back, and he said, you know, in the little house in the prairie days, they just basically knew what was going on in their community. He said, we really are not wired or framed to receive the kind of input and information our bodies get right now and our minds get. We, you know, we get news 24/7, the worst news, you know, and then you, not to mention the bent on the news, no matter what persuasion you're a part of, there's agendas, there's angst, there's anger. He said, we are just not wired for that kind of input. It's not good for our souls. And as I'm thinking of being a soul minimalist, you know, how does a person develop a constant practice around stewarding the health of their soul? I mean, not just that kind of obvious stuff that puts angst in your soul, but with all of the input, how do you steward that so you can simplify things in your soul a bit more?
We don't even realize all the input, do we? I mean, it's constant. Like you say, it's so, I think we move through life and we just carry it all and we don't realize all the things that we are carrying. I definitely think it is so much easier to just stay in motion than it takes so much more effort to slow down. It's like that whole, there's, you know, it's science that things in motion tend to stay in motion unless that there's something comes in the way. And the same goes for us on the level of our souls and in our lives. And, but, you know, I've discovered, you know, that our soul and our schedule, they don't follow the same rules. And so what's good for my schedule, productivity and blah, 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 it just might not be good for my soul. And so scheduling time, making sure that I am the boss of my schedule as much as is possible, sometimes it's not, rather than letting the schedule boss me and the productivity that we often tend to kind of worship. But man, I mean, I saw a documentary about these people who were climbing Mount Everest. I think it was Mount Everest. It was a really tall mountain somewhere, Susie. But basically, they were talking about how, you know, you can't go straight up because your body can't handle the pressure of the changes of the atmosphere. And so they'd have to stop these base camps along the way. And as they stopped, you know, when I imagine climbing a mountain, that's so much work, and it is, but there's also a lot of sitting around and letting your body acclimate to the new, you know, the new air that you're breathing so that you don't pass out as you go and get sick. And one of the climbers said, you know, it's during those times when he had to sit around and wait for his body to respond to the climate and the atmosphere, that he said the daily activity of everyday life would fall away. The little decisions that we make every day would fall away. And all I was left with was the big ones. And it's during those times of climbing that he would really be able to finally see his life for what it is and maybe make some huge life decisions or transitions because he finally had the space to do it because he didn't have any, he had to sit there. And man, aside from climbing a mountain, I mean, most of us will never have that opportunity handed to us. We have to create that kind of space. And so I think paying attention to our schedule, building in some days and our actual yearly rhythm that are set aside for, you know, quote unquote, mountain climbing days, you know, where we allow ourselves to sit and acclimate to, okay, what is my environment like right now? And how might I let the daily decisions of everyday life fall away for a little bit of time so that I can maybe be left with the big things, you know, that God and I might want to figure out if I need to make a change or transition right now. That's not naturally going to happen. Those are things we have to plan for and schedule for ourselves.
I love this. You're right. We're letting everyone else's agenda live for free in the sacred space of our creative mind, and it's time for eviction. This space is necessary for ideas to form, for questions to rise up, for hope to weave her way into our vision for the future, and for the dots of decision to begin to connect in the quiet places of our mind and heart. I want to say this again because someone texted in. They're sitting at their desk. They're kind of having a hard time putting pieces together for a nonprofit. They've been feeling overwhelmed. I want you to hear this one more time. It's so good. We're letting everybody else's agenda live for free in the sacred space of our creative mind, and it's time for eviction. This space is necessary for ideas to form, for questions to rise up, for hope to weave her way into our vision for the future, and for the dots of decision to begin to connect in the quiet places of our mind and heart. It is amazing. You even say, as we listen for what God is saying, when we give space to that, and we're not afraid of questions, we let stuff surface, when we listen, we're not listening alone. I mean, that just made my heart beat an extra beat. I just think that's beautiful. Say more if you would.
Well, I think we often, one of the reasons why we're afraid to move is because we often don't trust ourselves. And, you know, you mentioned the person who's weighing decisions about a nonprofit. First of all, if you're leading a nonprofit, that can be a really scary and lonely place because you have this vision and you believe so deeply in it. But when you're kind of having to be the one to steer the ship, that can be a lonely place. But, you know, God promises that he's with us and that he's always praying for us. The Spirit is always moving and speaking on our behalf with longings and desires more deep than words. And that can bring me a lot of comfort because sometimes that's how I feel. Like, I don't even know what to ask for in this prayer. I don't even know how to ask for, you know, direction. And there can be a great comfort knowing that, you know, we have a God who knows the words. And even if we just stop in prayer and open our hands and recognize, Father, I know you're with me. And I know you know the words, but I don't even know how to ask. I trust you. I believe you. And I pray you would help me in my unbelief. And recognizing his presence with me, man, I just, the more I think about this, the decision-making process and our spiritual formation and how it's all woven together, I really realize that while our decisions are important, they really are secondary because what's most deeply important is the person I'm becoming. And so I want to not just make better decisions, but learn to make decisions in a better way with my friend Jesus.
With my friend Jesus. And when you're listening, you're not listening alone. We're going to pause here, but I want to say Melissa writes in, texted in, said, decision making's always been difficult. Thanks for today's show. And this friend who's running the nonprofit's going to do just what you said, step out into the sunshine, get some fresh air. Jenna says, I love Emily and her podcast. I have her book and I'm taking her course. One of my favorite quotes she gave is from Elizabeth Elliot, you're loved with an everlasting love. Underneath are the everlasting arms. This brings such peace to mind. Janice, thanks for texting in. Love to hear from you as well. 877-933-2484. Email to get in on the drawing for this great book, Middays at MyFaithRadio.com. We will be back in a moment.
So give me faith like Daniel in the lion's den. Give me hope like Moses in the wilderness. Give me a heart like David, Lord, be my defense. So I can face my giants with confidence.
Hey, Thanks so much for tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson, having a really great conversation with Emily Freeman about her book. Have I said I love this book yet? I just really do. It's titled The Next Right Thing, A Simple Soulful Practice for Making Life Decisions. Beautiful writing, great content. We've got 6 copies. Email if you want in on the drawing, middays@myfaithradio.com. Okay, I love this excerpt too. I'd love for you to comment on it. If you feel stuck in a hopeless place today, I don't want to rush you to joy. Maybe you need to spend a little time letting the darkness do what the darkness does. Nourish, strengthen, and hold. Okay, Emily, say more about that.
Well, you know how it is when someone shares something hard with us. I think as humans, just as people who are compassionate and generous and loving, man, when we hear something hard, the first thing we want to do is to either fix it, to make it better, depending on our personality. You know, a lot of us are way more prone to that than others of us. But the last thing that we want to do for people is just to let them sit in the hard thing. But sometimes that's the very thing they need to do because God is working in them and in their life in a way that is going to naturally bring them to a place. And if we try to rush them ahead to a happy place or a joyful place before they're ready, then we might be kind of stealing from them something that God is working in and through them in His own timing. I think sometimes we can confuse a moment of sadness, even in our own lives, a moment of grief or of difficulty. Then we can sort of take that moment and we make it the whole story, when in fact it's not the whole narrative, it's just a plot point. And so I think that the challenge or the invitation, if you will, is to see the hard times in our life as one plot point in a bigger story, because the bigger story in the kingdom of God is always one of victory, of hope, of joy. And though things don't always feel victorious or hopeful or joyful, the big story in God's kingdom is that is the reality. But that doesn't take away for one second from the true heartache and grief and sorrow that some of us are walking through right now. And I think that's an important distinction to make with one another as people in the community of God, and to leave space for one another to work our way through times of difficulty, because again, that can also inform our decisions that we make or don't make. If we try to rush ahead to joy and kind of fake our way through, but we haven't actually dealt with these hard things, that can, we might be making decisions prematurely or before we're really ready.
Boy, that's so good. In your chapter, Name the Narrative, you asked some very thought-provoking questions. Is there a hurt you haven't quite let go? A regret that's been following you for so long you think it's normal? An excitement you haven't given yourself permission to explore? I want you to answer each one of these. I wish you'd get back to me and tell me your answers so we could have conversations around it. Is there an excitement you haven't given yourself permission to explore? A dream that might be hanging out in the wings, kicking at rocks and standing on tiptoe? Is your friend celebrating a success you wish was yours? Talk about the importance of those questions and what they tell you.
Well, you know, if we don't ask those questions, the answers are still true. But the problem is we won't realize they're in there. So, for example, that last one you mentioned, is a friend celebrating a success that you wish was yours instead? If we have a friend who's celebrating a success, maybe in a field of work that we also share, and they've quote-unquote made it and we haven't, we have some feelings about that. And we might even have acted on those. Maybe there's even something we need to confess. But if we don't admit that that's a hard thing, it will still be hard, but we won't know it. And so we'll move through life. We might actually be resentful of that friend. We might avoid that friend and not maybe even realize why we're doing it. We might be catty or we might be competitive. So there are ways that those things are true whether or not we admit them. But man, to admit them and to confess them in God's presence, sometimes they're not even sin. I mean, they're just, it's just a result of being human and in the world. And so recognizing these honest answers to difficult questions just helps us stay in touch with our neediness and our weakness. And this is, in fact, a gift. It's a way for us to be even closer united with Christ and remembering how much we need Him in these moments of weakness and of difficulty and of struggle. And the quicker we are able to admit some of these things that are just straight up hard, the sooner we will be able to experience some healing and some freedom from those things.
And also this question, excitement you haven't given yourself permission to explore. I mean, there's an invitation there. How many people suppress that thing because they are in their core, they believe they're have-nots, it's for everybody else, and yet that God-given thing is God-given. I mean, God has, like, issued an invitation. That's an important question to dare to ask ourselves, and we need to not be afraid of the discomfort that it stirs up as well, right?
It's so true. In fact, there are two questions that I ask myself on a monthly or at least a quarterly basis. And the questions are, number one, in my life right now, what is life draining? What is just kind of taking away from all the joy? And it could be a scheduling thing. It could be a part of my job that I just don't love. It could be a volunteer opportunity that I've just kept going and not taken time to evaluate. That's the first question. What is life draining? The second question is much more exciting, and that is, what is life giving? And writing those down, those two lists, what is life draining and what is life giving, let me tell you how informative those lists can be. When I have a whole list of things in my life that are life giving right now, wow, that can really be revealing about the places where I feel most deeply called. They can be revealing about my vocation and my giftedness. And about places where I might want to move into in the future, and talk about helping me make decisions, knowing what's life draining and what's life giving. That's really informative, and that plays really well with that question of, is there an excitement you haven't given yourself permission to explore? Just take a little time to play. It's risk-free. That's the lovely thing about our imagination, is that we can think about something, and though it might feel risky, it's really not in reality to consider, okay, well, what really gives me life right now? And if nothing comes to mind, ask Jesus. He will tell you. He's the smartest man who ever lived. He's the God of all. He knows everything. He knows you better than you know yourself. And so he will, I guarantee you that something will come up and you'll have some insight about your life that maybe if you hadn't asked the question, you wouldn't have.
Love this one as well. If you have a big question mark hanging out in your soul, maybe one that has to do with faith or vocation or relationships, perhaps your next right thing is to take a break from your frantic search for answers and look around for arrows instead. Listen to your personal desire or your mutual desire as a family or as a couple. Refuse to be afraid of it. And then you say, laugh, take a walk, make some plans, hold them loosely, and take some notes along the way. Okay, what does it mean to find some arrows? First of all, I think someone needed to hear that. Maybe you need to pause the frantic search, get out in the sunshine, go for a walk, get some exercise, belly laugh with a friend. That's what your soul needs. But what about this finding some arrows?
I think all of those things that you mentioned, first of all, isn't that such a lovely list?
Yes, I
love
it.
I love that list of things. It's so life-giving. But so many times, it's like when we had a big decision to make, we almost strangle it to the ground, don't we, Susie? It's like, oh, I just can't move forward until I make this decision, but it might not be time. And so instead of answers, of this frantic search for answers, the idea of looking for arrows, and that's really a next right thing mindset. It's, okay, I might not get the end answer that I want, but what is my next right thing? Is there an arrow today that I can follow, that I can trust because God is a good God and he knows what I need and he'll give it when I need it, that I can trust the arrow? And if I go the wrong way or if I'm doing something that's not good for me, he is perfectly capable of informing me and of turning me around. But until then, I'm going to do the next right thing that makes sense. And I'm going to trust that my friend Jesus will go with me no matter which thing I choose, because I'm doing it in his presence, aware that he's with me. And those arrows, sometimes the arrows just look like a hand extended. They look like a simple invitation. Sometimes it looks like a folded down bed that says, hey, come to bed. You need to think about this tomorrow. Sometimes it's just a conversation with a friend or an email that comes. Little arrows that might not help me make my final decision, but they get me one step closer. And so asking God to reveal those arrows to me can be a lot less pressure than having to find, you know, make sure I have an answer. Instead, I think there's a great invitation that we have to simply look for arrows.
Wow. I have loved every minute of this conversation, Emily, and I do pray you'll come back and join us again. I feel like there's so much more in here we can draw from the book. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Susie.
And, you know, just based on the email response, you've resonated with very many of our listeners. Thanks to you too, friend, for listening. Talking to Emily Freeman about her book, The Next Right Thing, A Simple Soulful Practice for Making Life Decisions. I appreciate you so much, and I appreciate my two amazing producers, Kim and Carissa. Thanks for the great work you two do behind the scenes every single day. Hey, keep walking intimately with the Lord. Remember this, it is impossible for Him to fail you. We'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this Middays with Suzy Larson podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of Middays with Suzy Larson.